Before we get started with today's show, remember the Jalen Jacoby After Show podcast continues this Sunday following 30 for 30's Be Water, a documentary about Bruce Lee. In 1971, after being rejected by Hollywood, Bruce Lee returned to his parents' homeland of Hong Kong to complete four iconic films. Charting his struggles between two worlds, this portrait explores questions of identity and representation through the use of rare archival interviews with loved ones and Bruce's own writings. And a reminder that all 30 for 30 documentaries can be streamed on ESPN+. Also, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, SV Pod. Scott gets some of the best guests out there, so be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to SV Pod now, as well as download and subscribe at the right time wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we'll tell you about monkeys stealing COVID-19 samples. We got your voicemails on the biggest lies you've ever heard or told. But first. All right. I mean, I guess you kind of sort of know what would be coming first. And I'm assuming you know, because I'm assuming that at least 15 or 16 of y'all have called me to ask me to be on your radio show, podcast, or television program in the course of the last 48 hours. People turned on the news. They saw the world was burning. And now everybody want to come talk to me about the world burning. I understand that. That's a significant part, I imagine, as to why some people are here to listen to me now on this particular podcast. The thing with George Floyd in Minneapolis, one thing, of course, I have to start with, it's just kind of, you know, if you know me or know anything about me, I don't watch these videos anymore. I just don't. I don't need to see how somebody has died. Like, I remember my brother once told me that he had never seen the Joe Theismann injury. Right, when Joe Theismann got his leg broken. He said people told him what it was, and he was like, oh, why in the world would I want to watch that, right? That's kind of where I am with a lot of these police videos, and I understand that people feel like they need to watch them. Like, you can't just bury your head in the sand. I mean, you could watch that video, then after you watch it, go bury your head in the sand right after, right? Like, yeah, I'm down to bury my head in the sand when it comes to watching somebody die. It's just not my bag, right? The particulars of it, for me, honestly don't matter that much. But y'all watch this video, and my only guess that I can have as to why what's happened with Floyd has generated a much different response than we've seen with a lot of other situations involving police killing people is the video. Gabe, did you watch it?
It's less I've seen the video and more I've seen the photos from said video.
Got it. Because I think that for a lot of people, like watching somebody get shot, especially because like in the movies when people get shot, it's just a little bit more dramatic than it is in real life. Like, I've seen somebody get shot in front of me. I've seen people get shot on videos. Like, there ain't no flash bang that comes out of the gun in real life like you see in the movies, right? It's not necessarily so dramatic with somebody just, like, flailing around when they get shot. Very often, man, you see somebody there, and then all of a sudden they're on the ground. Like, it just kind of goes. And I think that in the same way that guns make killers out of a particular set of cowards, watching videos of shootings could also just kind of like not hit you in that way, because it almost in effect doesn't seem real. And so I think that for some people, and from what I've been told, because I've asked about this, watching this cop put his knee on the dude's neck and lean on him for 9 minutes, it just went beyond anything that people were accustomed to seeing. There was really no rationalization that you could make about it. And there was no, like I always say that, like, as far as killing people goes, you got to have something in you to kill somebody with your bare hands, right? Like, all of us, I think, are capable of killing somebody with a gun, right? Like, one moment, a flash, an impulse, or whatever it is, just about every single person is capable of killing somebody with a gun. It's a rare select subset of people that can kill somebody with their bare hands. Like, that, it just takes something else in you to do something like that. Hell, it takes something else in you to kill somebody with a knife, but let alone with no weapons. Like, you're just gonna use your body in whatever way to kill somebody. Ain't a whole lot of people that can do that. And so, if you are watching somebody kill someone, by putting their knee on their neck while your man's is holding them down and got, from what I understand, a real self-satisfied look on your face, it's very difficult for people to view that as anything other than an act of evil, right? Like, if you were to watch what happened as it's been described to me and just kind of shake it off and walk away, like, that's the kind of thing to make you ask some questions about yourself. At least that's the impression that I've gathered from this. And so that's the only way that I can guess that it's gone like this. Like, we had my man Nick Wright on last week, and Gabe is funny. I was just like, so what's going to happen if this turns into something that makes it impossible for our industry to ignore? And I said that your TV networks are going to look just like they did in 2016. And guess what? Our TV network looks just like it did in 2016, right? Remember, everybody was just like, oh, how ridiculously woke this place got and everything else. We're just out here doing our jobs. Here we are again to do our jobs. Like, this is where we are. But we asked, we were just like, yo, so what's going to happen when this becomes impossible to avoid? Stuff in the street has now made this impossible to avoid. Almost ironically, because of direct ties to politics. Well, everybody says you got to stay away from politics. Welcome to the real world. We are now here. Now, I admit that for me, it is both appreciated and awkward that all these white folks showed up to the party now. Obviously, it is appreciated because people are more likely to listen to white people than they are to listen to me on these matters. Like, consider the fact that the Goodman, Schwerner, Cheney murders in the 1960s was such a significant turning point in the civil rights movement, in large part because they had these images of these two white dudes getting killed, right? Like, we had a new face on this. It's like, oh man, this can happen to us. And I think another level of what's going on in these streets right now that I think is turning a bit of the tide and informing the attention that this is getting is, as much as the cops treat black folks worse than they treat white folks, let's not pretend like they're that great to white people. Like, yeah, they be showing up with these white ladies calling up about some nonsense and they come run you out and all this stuff like that. But it's plenty of white dudes with real messed up stories about dealing with the police, because reality is, if the police decide they're going to put their hands on you, it doesn't really matter who you are. They're going to put their hands on you and they are going to get away with it. And with these protests, which have brought more white people into the streets to participate, we are also seeing footage of the police running over white folks, throwing white women down onto the ground. Right? Like, the idea of police brutality is about to get a lot broader. Okay. So if you think about this, if your political inclinations are toward the side of libertarianism, and libertarianism to me has a whole lot of like ideological flaws, but I see how people arrive at that place. If you are truly a libertarian, then what's going on with the police has to be offensive to your sensibilities, right? Like, it runs counter to everything that you say that you believe, unless you as libertarians see the people who are under taking the brunt of whatever it is, and you're like, oh, okay, cool, this is not me. But now they are starting to hit white people with this, and now it becomes a, oh, maybe not. Like Dale Murphy, Gabe, I imagine that Dale Murphy, you're of an age where Dale Murphy don't mean that much to you. But Dale Murphy is my first favorite athlete ever. Like, I remember having the Dale Murphy poster on the wall from the first Braves game we went to in 87. And like, I think the sponsor must have been, I think it was Oscar Mayer, whoever it was one of the hot dog company, because they had the flavor of the South on it, right? Because, you know, they sponsor all those giveaways. And I had all those, you know, I had the Dale Murphy poster on the wall. Like, Murph, for people of a particular age, black, white, it don't matter. Murph is our dude. Murph is also a member of the Church of Jesus Christ and Latter-day Saints. Like, he extra white, you know? But our LDS brothers and sisters, generally speaking, are not so wild about this Trump thing. And so I wonder how that's caused some interesting kind of ideological overlap on some enemy of my enemy is my friend, and getting some of those people to explore some causes that they might not have otherwise considered just because they're not down with anything Trump is down for. So anyway, Murph said that his son was protesting in Denver and got hit with a rubber bullet. And by the way, like, a rubber bullet, I'm trying to think of something that's analogous to like the rubber bullet, where they want you to think about the rubber part, but the bullet, like, still a big deal. Anyway, next thing I know, I look up on Twitter, Murph is not just standing with the protesters. Murph is not just sending out links to bail funds. Murph out here sending out links to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and the Black Lives Matter movement. Yo, and by the way, let me just say, if I may make this personal for a moment, and I know this is not fully rational, right? It kind of made me a little bit emotional to see that my first favorite player showed up on what I think is the side of right in this particular moment. It was like, yo, Murph, we are all in this together. That's all right. But I mentioned Murph as an example of how this has attracted attention for white people in a much different way, right? And so it is appreciated that they are there because, again, there are people who will listen to Dale Murphy who will not listen to me, and it's good that we see those people in the space. On the other hand, I would like to, like, have a discussion at some point, and we got to decide, like, when can we start laughing at our white friends about some of the stuff that they're doing right now? Because they mean well, right? All our white friends mean very well. I imagine that if you are a black person who exists in spaces where you have, like, where you deal with a lot of white people, you have received the text messages, you have gotten the emails of people just wanting to find out how you are doing. And it is greatly appreciated, like, from where I come from on this, because I know that people are doing this from the bottom of their hearts. And from the bottom of their hearts, some of this stuff is uproarious, man. People, they hit me up like, yo, is there anything I can do for you? Nah, not really. If there was, I'd have been hitting you up about that shit a while ago. Like, just so you know. And the thing, again, everybody means well. So I don't ever want to say something that makes people feel like I'm dismissing them or pushing them out of hand. Like, I don't know how many of y'all have seen a movie called Malcolm X, but I ain't trying to be in a moment where the white girl comes up to Malcolm and it's like, yo, I just want to know if there's anything that white people could do for the movement. And he says nothing and walks away. Like, nah, I'm not saying that. But at the same time, man, have you seen some of the things that people are putting up on Instagram? They just don't know what to say. That's all it is, right? They all mean well. They just don't know what to say. They're doing the blackout thing on the internet today. It's going all kinds of places, and that's fine. Like, I don't have any, like, issue or real qualm or disagreement with that. But I ain't going to lie. My agent told me that at his job that they supposed to be doing, like, a blackout today, you know, like, think about some stuff. Hey, man. What if I need to talk to you? Right? Can you black in for your black client? No. Put down that copy of Between the World and Me. I got some things I need to get rectified. Right? Like we have all of this that is going on totally at one time, but it all feels so tense, I think, for a lot of people. And for me, like, seeing what's going on outside doesn't make me feel tense right now. I got a bad feeling where this is all ultimately going to go. And I'll be honest with you. My fear in this is that we will have a Tiananmen Square moment with everything that's going on outside. So look, man, we're seeing cops riding down the street, opening their car doors and hitting people. We're seeing them throw people around, like, all of this stuff. This, to me, is a limitation in the way that the media handles things involving police kind of generally, but these kinds of things specifically, which is people in the media are not equipped to discuss things on a street level. Now, I'm not saying this to you as though I'm like the rough and tumblest dude who comes from the mean streets of wherever it is, right? But what I'm saying is that what's happening right now with police in the way that they're being used, it's street. And when I say that it's street, I mean that it's street because who runs the streets? Wherever your city is, who runs the streets? The cops run the streets. And when people talk about, like, super duper extra bad neighborhoods, what's the argument that they make? Argument that they make is that neighborhood's so bad, even the police don't want to come in there, right? Because those streets don't belong to the police anymore, right? That's what they're saying. But the streets, everywhere you go, the streets are the property of the police. You go outside your house right now, who's in charge? Who makes the rules? Who tells you what you can and cannot do? The police do that. They run the streets, okay? So you could think about that in, like, broader terms, using more jargon. You know, where you look at it and just say, well, the police are the authority. The police are law and order. The police have legal authority. Like, all those things. That's the way that you say that. That's the way that they're going to say it on television. But that don't resonate like what it is on the level that we're talking about, which is the cops run the streets. And so what happens now when you get hundreds of people and you get thousands of people and they're marching in the streets, right? They're running up on these stores, right? Some people, and it's a little tricky talking about who and why in this case, are like breaking windows and they're doing all this stuff and they're doing everything else. They are taking over the streets. Now, you and I can look at it as, okay, well, these are just rebellions or whatever it is that's going on in this current moment in time, and then it'll pass or whatever and da-da-da. But the cops are looking at it as, if we let people get in these streets and feel like the streets belong to them, then they're going to think that the streets belong to them all the time. And no, the streets belong to us. And so what you have is a fight over who do the streets truly belong to. And when you think about it like that, all that brutality that you're going to see and the stuff that you see on television, it's happening because for one side, this is a fight. For the other side, this is a war. That's a huge distinction. Before you get to race and anything else, you just got to understand that what you're watching right now is about who runs these streets. And the cops ain't going to back down on it until it is clear that they are, in fact, the people who run these streets. And we've seen this happen enough. We've seen it happen over and over and over again. We've seen it happen in all these places. Now, another reason why I think what's happened with George Floyd has resonated with people is another enemy of my enemy is my friend scenario. And what that is that I think a lot of people looked on television and saw these folks running up on state houses and all these places with their long guns, right? Why? Because they wanted to go get a haircut. You know, why? Because they wanted to go to a restaurant and they saw those people treated with courtesy. You get what I'm saying? And then after seeing those people treated with courtesy, the juxtaposition of seeing George Floyd and then the juxtaposition of seeing all the cops come out in riot gear and everything else, right? Like all that put together. And if you were one of those people who legitimately was like, oh, no, I just don't think it's like that. That all became very difficult to ignore. But you notice when them folks show up somewhere with them long guns, they don't get aggressive with it. Why? Because ultimately, they know them dudes with the long guns kind of run their streets. They're the ones who are kind of in charge. They coming out here with artillery as big as your artillery. And they're white, right? They command a certain level of authority just by virtue that these other people that you're dealing with really aren't. That's why they don't buck back at them. Why? Because once again, we're still on a street level when we talk about this. They look at those dudes and they're like, nah, man, they're going to fight back. Like when all these people who come out here to protest this stuff behind the police get on the streets, you think about that. They ain't showing up. Like somebody might be showing up with a gun, but you don't hear about a whole lot of like mass shooting stuff going on amongst those dudes. They know they can't be out here showing up with weapons. They don't have that level of privilege. But when these cats decide they want to get a haircut, they do. Right. These are all statements of fact, by the way. Like, I'm not really giving you a lot of opinion right now. This is just how it works. And so these cats coming out here with their long guns and then people see all that and they're like, yo, this really is backwards. Like, this really is busted. And then those dudes with the long guns are showing up to the protest to call themselves maintaining law and order. They're showing up on the streets to protect stores, so to speak. I saw something where Philly had a curfew last night, but it was bands of white dudes walk around with baseball bats to protect their streets. With the authority of the police department. You see what I mean? Like, so all of this right now is directly in front of you. And what is reality to me becomes impossible to ignore. And that's what I think is the cocktail that's come together that's brought us now to this place where as I record this at 11 o'clock Eastern time on Tuesday, June the 2nd, I got no idea what's going to happen by the time we release this. I got no idea what's going to happen by the night that this is out, right? I got no idea what's going to happen before you start listening to it. I don't know, right? But all I can do right now, at least on that point, is I can tell you what my read is on exactly what is going on. And the moral of the story is the police are not giving the streets to your righteous indignation. They're not. They're not. And at some point, it's just going to be a matter of whether the citizens of this country are going to tolerate that, right? Like that, how this proceeds really just simply depends on that fact. are the citizens of this country going to tolerate that? You can decide whether they should or should not. I'm just telling you right now, the meter's pushing more toward no than I've ever seen it push before. All right, so I was talking to friend of the program, Joel Anderson, who was once the fastest 10-year-old in America and is the only 40-year-old that still talks about being the fastest 10-year-old in America. Anyway, Joel made a very good point, and he said, as you watch and you look at all these corporate statements that are coming out, look for the words that aren't used. One word that is used sporadically is black. Not everybody knows what to do with black. Like, I ain't gonna lie, just so you know, my Caucasian brothers and sisters. Like, you know, so I say Caucasian, and I say that very facetiously because no one ever calls anybody a Caucasian. That's kind of what it is with this African-American thing. Like, nothing tells me that a white person don't know what the hell to do quite like when they start using terms like the African-American community. You don't talk like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's all I'm saying. You don't talk like that, right? Why you got to make up a whole new word for when you start talking about black people in public? What you be saying when we not there? It's a legitimate fair question for me to ask when that happens, because I'm black and that's fine. And by the way, I've hinted at this point and maybe one day I'll go deeper into it. We are people. We are not a community. There are communities within what you believe to be that community, but that makes it easy to not think of us as people, right? This is something that I think about when I read all these statements. It's kind of some of the subtleties in the terminology, because look, all these teams and these leagues and these businesses and everybody else, when they put out their statements, they have a problem. They're doing this for public relations. Number one thing about public relations is don't offend somebody. It is borderline impossible to say something worthwhile on this matter without offending somebody, and the somebody in particular being white people. And that is always what people are trying not to do, is offend the white folks, right? So all these teams then wind up in very awkward and difficult situations, because what they're trying to do is antithetical to the way they are trying to do it. Okay? That's where they wind up in a tough one. And so you wind up with statements like the NFL's that kind of meanders and goes all over the place. And then you realize they didn't say anything at all. Like, let me read you that NFL statement right fast. Cause it was, I mean, I guess you can only be who you are, right? And the NFL, this is not who they are. This is not really what they do. So the NFL statement read, the NFL family is greatly saddened by the tragic events across our country. The protesters' reaction to these incidents reflect the pain, anger, and frustration that so many of us feel. Our deepest condolences go out to the family of Mr. George Floyd and to those who have lost loved ones, including the families of Ms. Breonna Taylor in Louisville and Mr. Ahmaud Arbery, the cousin of Tracy Walker of the Detroit Lions. As current events dramatically underscore, there remains much more to do as a country and as a league. These tragedies inform the NFL's commitment and our ongoing efforts. There remains an urgent need for action. We recognize the power of our platform in communities and as part of the fabric of American society. We embrace that responsibility and are committed to continuing the important work to address these systemic issues together with our players, clubs, and partners. Number one, calling this systemic allows you to not actually blame any person. Right? It's just this system that's out here running. And it matters that it is systemic, and it's worthwhile to notice that. But then it also absolves people of personal responsibility. But two, you notice they ain't saying nothing about the word police, right? Like, they say they want to, we want to address these systemic issues together, our players, clubs, and partners. Yo, man, y'all the ones that's friends with the police. Why don't you go talk to them? Like, that's your squad. Those your people, right? Why don't you go work with them? Like, how am I supposed to make people stop killing me? Right? What could black people do to make George Floyd not happen? Right? Like, this is both sides nonsense that you can't really have. But these are how these statements work. But you notice the word that is not in this statement, and the word is police. Cause ain't nobody trying to go to war with the police. And I do think that it is worth remembering for us all that in Minneapolis, wherever it is, after we get done with this, with these protests or whatever, and these arguments and everything that turns out, like after that goes away, we're going to go back on to our lives. The people that directly take on the police are still going to be wherever they are, in the cities where they are, and they're going to have to still incur all the risks that come from doing battle with the police, right? So I don't want to pretend as though I don't understand where these teams come from when they want to avoid, like, going to war with the police, because they're a sensitive bunch. Like, I don't know if you guys have noticed. Yo, Bruce Springsteen, are you familiar with this Bruce Springsteen song, Gabe, called 41 Shots?
I'm not familiar, no.
All right, it's about the Diallo shooting in New York in, I guess, 99, 2000, around there. And the cop shot, dude was holding his wallet, and they shot at him 41 times, hit him 19 times. And the hook on the song is it a gun? Is it a knife? Is it your wallet? This is your life. It ain't no secret, my friend. You can get yours just for living in your American skin, right? He's got a whole verse about, you know, the talk, like, promise if an officer stops you, you'll always be polite. You'll never, ever run away. Promise mama you'll keep your hands in sight, like all of this stuff. This is Bruce Springsteen, the head of one of the police unions around. I can't remember if it was New York or New Jersey. Called him a like, publicly. The police are a sensitive bunch. That's what I'm saying. So I get why it is that people don't want to go to war with them. However, we did have one team that made a statement that made reference to maybe not the police, but to police. And that team is the New York Islanders. We condemn racism and injustice and stand with all affected by senseless violence. We must come together, treating each other with empathy, dignity, and respect. The New York Islanders endorsed the NHL statement, which includes, in our own sport, we will continue to do better and work diligently toward culture change throughout hockey and endeavor to be mindful of our own shortcomings in this process. To the brave officers who go to work every day seeing the human being and not the color of one's skin, we thank you for protecting us. Gabe, they went Blue Lives Matter now. And you know why? It's a lot of cops living over there on Long Island. That's why. They basically said police officers buy hot dogs too.
And they basically went, I don't see color on you.
Yes, yes. These are the people that mention the police in their statements. These are the people that chose to bring it up. But otherwise, nobody wants to talk about the police. And what we're talking about is the police, you know? And so I think that for these entities, and I get a little torn about this because we're going to get into like the Dabo Swinney situation. Well, I guess it's kind of my Dabo Swinney situation. But anyway, we'll get into it in a second. But on one level, I'm like, yo, I want to hear something from, you know, these people and entities that have the power to do something. We'd like to hear something from them, right? Like show a significant, your customer base, right? That, you know, you care about this. While also recognizing that most of these people ain't going to say a damn thing, right? And I at once do not want people to say something just for the sake of saying it while also wanting people to say something. And it kind of puts me in an odd place because I'm like, yo, say something. And then the people say something. I'm like, okay, but that's not good enough. And it's fair for me to say that this is not good enough. Of course, Gabe, the New York Knicks, have you seen this? They're not going to put out a statement.
And one Pablo Torre reporter yes, hat did. Back on.
Yes, he did. He got that. But you know what's interesting about it? Jim Dolan, and this is where all this stuff gets wonky, right? Jim Dolan not putting out a statement on this, mad problematic, right? How many people have given black dudes real position of power in their basketball organizations in the way that Jim Dolan has? General managers, VPs of basketball operations, head coaches. You know what I mean? Like Jim Dolan, if Jim Dolan gonna go get a white dude, he don't really go get any white dude. He goes and gets Larry Brown. He goes and gets Phil Jackson. You know, like you gotta really, really, really impress him for him to not go hire a black dude, right? But like if I was just talking about hiring or whatever it was, I could put that up there. But I could also say the same about Donald Sterling. You see what I mean? Like all of this just kind of gets jumbled up into what it is. But no, I don't want people just to make statements for the sake of making statements. I would say, however, if you did not put out a statement, these three people put out statements on what's going on right now. Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, and O.J. Simpson. I'm just saying, did I just say O.J. Simpson and then do, I'm just saying. Gabe, you watch the videos. Admit it. It's okay. O.J.'s Twitter videos.
I haven't seen them.
You've never watched any of his Twitter videos?
No, I don't follow him.
Okay. I don't follow him, right? Because then they'll put my name on it.
Yeah, but I'm not following and I'm also not pursuing.
It's not a matter of pursuing.
It just comes up on the timeline. Is that what you're saying?
So it's a safe space, right?
No doubt.
I've been keeping this in and a lot of other people have been keeping this in. And I understand there's significant reason to believe that 26 years ago, O.J. Simpson killed a couple of people. right? Good reason to think so. That Twitter account is a fascinating lens to view 2020 through. Fascinating. Those videos are the most bizarre content that anybody is producing. Because the thing is, number one, every now and then OJ has a point. OJ had a point on this, right? But then also every now and then, OJ kind of taunts you about the fact that he may have killed a couple of people, right? So for example, Gabe, when Antonio Brown was acting ridiculous on Twitter and messing up OJ's fantasy team, OJ gets on the Twitter account on the video and says, I have some advice for you, Antonio Brown. I'm going to tell you what some of the great legal minds in the history of this country have told me. Just don't say anything when something like this comes up. OJ Simpson, it's like, it's just all over the place. But anyway, OJ Simpson, not here for the police brutality. So if you are someone in a position of visibility and you ain't got nothing to say, there are good reasons for you to not have something to say, right? I actually thought that if people like Jim Dolan more, that email goes over differently. If he's like, look, I'm not going to do this to posture for everybody else. I'm going to worry about what we're doing here. If you like Jim Dolan more, you could kind of rock that out. However, when OJ Simpson got something to say on the matter and you do not, right? It's like these people with what happened to Floyd, the ones who don't want to say something was wrong. Rush Limbaugh said that something was wrong. Like, you are to the right of Rush Limbaugh if this happens, right? And we acknowledge Rush Limbaugh is not a centrist type of figure. Like, that's where we are in this. But these teams, they want to put out these statements. They still think that white folks are so racist that they can't tell the truth even once. And that's what it ultimately comes down to. This is a point that I've made on this show before, and I don't know how many of you have fully appreciated it, but this may be your time to like fully think about this. All these people who think I'm a racist, I think you can handle what I have to say. I think that you can handle the points that I make. I think that you are capable of listening to me when I talk about situations that are about based on inequalities and inequities. I think you can. It's white people who think you can't. It's corporations who think you can't. They're the ones who think that you hate black people so much that if I get out here and talk about black people being mistreated, that you can't handle listening to it. They're the ones that tell you that. And you know what? Maybe they're right. Like, when it comes down to a matter about black people, white folks come and ask me questions. Maybe I need to be asking them questions about white folks, right? Like, it is entirely possible that I'm the one that's got it all wrong. That I, as the person who shows you the respect of thinking that you are intelligent enough, reasonable enough, and have enough of a moral center about yourself that you can listen to the things that I talk about. Maybe I'm wrong in thinking that you can handle it because you call me a racist for me showing you respect and you appreciate these other people hiding behind your little feelings. I think that you can be better than you are. That's it. When King died, Stokely Carmichael had a great quote. He said he just found it to be so insane that Martin Luther King got killed. And he was like, y'all gonna really hate this because that was the only man who thought y'all were redeemable. He said that was the man who loved you enough to think that you could do better. And then you shot him, right? Just think about what that means. You know what I mean? Just think about what comes to the bottom of it. And think about that when you see all this stuff that these teams themselves are not saying. But part of why they're not saying it, and I get this, they got too much in their own houses that they got to clean up. Like when the NFL is like, yo, we recognize systemic racism. Yeah, I recognize it. It's your hiring practices, right? Yeah, I recognize it. It's the way that you treat quarterbacks. Like you have so many explicit issues of race within your own house. And so I do think that a lot of these teams are like, yo, we got to be careful not to put out a statement that's not going to turn into a, but what about? I just saw it a second ago where the Cubs put out a statement and talk about how opposed they were to racism. And then people started digging up all the stuff that these Ricketts folks have had to say over time, like calling Islam a cult, for an example, and stuff like that, right? Like all that stuff starts popping up. And so these teams don't know what to do because now is the time for them to stand for right. But they ain't necessarily trying to do right. And so the police situation allows you to otherize it, right? It allows you to put it off and then you call it the system. System wasn't on George Floyd's neck, right? That was a person. But unless you put all that stuff all the way away, 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 away. But now we got to sit back with these teams and they got to look at what they're doing in front of themselves. Like they got to look at what they are doing themselves, you know? And what they going to do then? Because let me tell you something, right? Like normally we do a little fun musical break right here, but I'm going to just go straight into it. These college football players are a part of this. I don't think our media is fully appreciating this. Like, they're like, oh, you know, Trevor Lawrence put out a great statement, right? Like, people can see that and do, you know, like, that gets them up. They think about that. Hey, man, y'all don't understand the dynamics of race on college football teams. Y'all don't really get, like, I think all of you have, not all, but a lot of you have this impression, in line with that Patrick Mahomes statement about how the locker room is the place where everybody is welcome and all these other things don't matter. And that is flat out bull. And I feel like he knows that that is the case. Locker rooms are crazy segregated, right? And the reason they're crazy segregated is it's just enough white dudes on the team that the white dudes don't have to hang out with nobody else. I think you kind of get this also in baseball, but it's really a language sort of thing. But you reach a place where now there are enough Latin dudes that the Latin dudes can all speak Spanish with each other if they so decide, you know, and don't have to like necessarily go to this other place. You see what I mean? So like football teams are crazy segregated, and the white dudes are coming from different worlds than the black dudes are typically coming from on these teams. And one thing a lot of y'all don't realize is it's coaches out here talking racially crazy to these kids all over America, right? Like, you think that this football team, the coach is like dad and loves everybody. Nah, man, coach is like the boss. And just like at every other office, like, there's some like charming examples that you'll find, but these kids know where their coaches stand on a lot of issues, and they know where their coaches stand on a lot of issues because those coaches are telling them where they stand on those issues. So right before we got started today, came across three former Pitt football players got on the tweets. Now, granted, these are guys who are no longer on the team. One transferred, one was dismissed, and one, it was a mutual parting of ways, right? So I want to give you that context. But one guy gets on and talks about how Pat Narduzzi, the coach at Pittsburgh, used to call opponents thugs. Said he called their own teammates thugs if they were wearing a hood underneath their travel jumpsuit. Said if they wore their baseball caps backwards, they were called thugs. And his point was, just because you're not out here calling us slurs doesn't mean that this stuff doesn't happen. That first player's name is Elias Reynolds. Darian Street retweets that and says he's not lying. He says it's very toxic. And then the third dude, Justin Morgan, says, remember when he told me to cut my dreads, then said it was pitiful when he didn't see me with a haircut the next day. These things happen in college football programs a lot, okay? They happen a lot. And these kids ain't stupid. They know who the people are that they are dealing with. That's why I've asked these questions about college football coaches and their statements or what they're saying right now, because I'm like, I'm telling you, man, your players want to hear from you. There are some players who want to hear from you because they're angry. There's some players that want to hear from you, man, because they believe that you are what you said you would be, right? Like, they believe in the most idealistic notion of what the coach is. Like, there's some guys that are like that. They are looking for that guidance. They are looking for that leader. Like, I don't know how many of these college football players have like professors that are their mentors. Like, you know, most of us who like were really into it in college, you have a professor you can go back and talk to, be happy to see you. I don't know if these guys get to spend that kind of time in that way, right? Like, they got their football coaches. Like, these are the people who have helped to guide them in their lives. And so I've been like, yo, these kids are going to want to hear from you and what you have to say about this. And by the way, their parents are going to want to hear from you and hear what you have to say about these matters. And I think it becomes doubly important in the time of this virus. Because, A, I'm not sure how many parents are just going to be readily sending their kids to go, like, play football for these people under these circumstances. I'm just not. Like, I personally am at a place where I'm just not assuming everybody's going to show up. But all of that, you're going to ask these kids to come risk their lives, and you ain't got nothing to say about the danger that they are in or that they feel outside of this? No, we're going to need this. And so for me, and Trevor Lawrence put out his statement, and I was like, all right, so where you at, Debo? I thought it was noteworthy, and I think I am correct in saying this, that it was noteworthy that the 20-year-old had something to say before the world, before the head coach did. On one level, that is a testament to Trevor Lawrence and his maturity, and it makes me very curious to know more about him, right? Because I think for him, this is dangerous, because like, I'm not trying to give white people more credit for anything that I would give black people in the same place, except I have to also be honest and recognize that there is a measure of bravery that comes from somebody in his position, in his place, being willing to say the things that he had to say, even if they weren't the most revolutionary things in the world. NFL quarterbacks wasn't even really doing that much. Black and white, by the way. So like he stood, but Dabo's the one that makes $7 million a year. Dabo's the one that's supposed to be the leader of men. Like, so I'm like, where are you on this? Where are you standing on this matter? And keep in mind, when the Kaepernick thing happened, Dabo was the one that said that if you don't like it, you should move out the country. Now, he walked that back a little bit when he made statements yesterday, but it was fair to wonder, what do you think right now? Like, can you see what's happening? And like, could you just then again, just be like, well, if you don't like it, you need to leave the country, right? Like, could you actually do these things? And so Dabo did press availability yesterday, being in front of people and actually talking it out. I think that that is what a leader would do under these circumstances, even if I don't agree with the way he ultimately approached it. And I did not agree with the way that he ultimately approached it. And Gabe, we got the clip we were talking about earlier, because I want people to hear this and I want to explain why I'm not here for Dabo doing this.
What I know as I, you know, approach everything from a perspective of faith is that where there are people, there's going to be hate. There's going to be racism and greed and jealousy and crime and so on, because we live in a sinful, fallen world. And we've had so much bad news. Everywhere you turn, there's bad news. But really today, I just wanted to take a moment and offer some good news. And for me, the good news is that we have a Lord that loves us all and that has conquered already. And that we all have a choice as to how we think, how we love, how we respond, and how we forgive.
And what I will say before I play this next bite is that email noise was not me. It was on the damn conference call. Oh, so yeah. Don't blame the producer here. All right, second cut.
There's no question that these are challenging times. But what I've learned is where there is no challenge, there is no change. And we have to all accept the challenge and all help to bring about positive change and growth.
Like, what does that mean? You know, and see, the forgiveness part. All right. I did a long tweet storm about this yesterday. I think to understand Dabo, one thing you have to understand is for him, not, by the way, unlike Martin Luther King, his faith is not simply his belief structure, but it is the basis of like his worldview, like his philosophy. Like the thing about King is King and everything he writes, it's a philosophy. It harkens to his faith and his religion and everything else, but in the end, it is a philosophy. And so for Dabo, what he gives you every time he talks about anything is his philosophy, right? Like this is how he sees every problem. He doesn't really adapt it that much, except he kind of adapts it somewhat, right? Like one thing about hearing him talk about is the importance of forgiveness and everything else. This is something to me that was always very illustrative about who Dabo Swinney was in ways good and bad. That first time they were in the national championship game, Deion Kane had been suspended for the national semifinal because he failed a drug test. I'm presuming for marijuana, but he failed a drug test. He missed the national semifinal as was required by rule, but he could be brought back after that, right? So Clemson won the national semifinal. Dabo said, hell no, he's still not playing the next game. He's not. On one level, I respected him because that's the dumbest thing in the world that he possibly could have done. And I say that was dumb because it might have cost them a national championship. I don't know why more people don't talk about this. It might have cost them a national championship. That was a close game. It might have cost them a national championship that he chose to make that decision. But even with a chance to profit on the other side, he said, no, this is how I see it. These are my rules. He's not going to play. I respect it just because he did it to the detriment of self. Like he means what he says on some level. On another level, though, I hear that and I'm like, so where was your forgiveness in that case? You understand what I'm saying? Because this is what it feels like to me. It feels like to me right now, people are looking at white folks like, what y'all about to do? And Dabo's looking back like we're all sinners. But that ain't what we talking about right now, right? We talking about you and yours And it is about you and yours. And you acknowledge and you understand that it's about you and yours. And so we're looking at you like, okay, yeah, so we all need to forgive each other for all this stuff. Okay, but for what we talk about right now, right? Forget your broad worldview. Bring it specifically to right now. If you think that this is about the need to forgive, and I do believe in the nobility of forgiveness. I honestly do, right? I think all of us wish that we were more capable of forgiving. I think all of us would be happier. We've all got somebody that we, not all, but most of us, I think, have somebody that we struggle to forgive and that we would be happier if we could just let that pain and we could just let that anger go. I think we have a lot of us who are that way, right? And I think that for a lot of Black people, for example, they would be happier if they could forgive white folks for all this racism that has rained down upon us. I think they would be happier. No question about it. But what in the hell are white people mad at us for? Right? Like if you are Dabo and you're like, we all sinners, we all need to forgive each other. What the hell do white people need to forgive Black people for? Right? And that's the problem with Dabo, is that Dabo won't stand in the truth of reality. Dabo, you know, everywhere you go, you have people, you're going to have racism, da, 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 and all this stuff. Yeah. I hear you. But these the people that we talking about right now, right? I do believe that a lot of white people fundamentally believe that the only reason that the racism comes down on Black people is because white people are the ones who are in charge. Like they believe that we would have done everything the exact same way. And that's in a lot of ways how they justify what the treatment is, right? It's just a matter of whose foot the shoe was on and all of this stuff. But Dabo is an example of a man who means well, but his good intentions cannot match reality, right? Because his good intentions, he is not able to adapt and recognize the limitations of his philosophy unless it's time to lean on Deion Kane about failing the drug test. Now, some of you Clemson fans have been on this and they want to know, why are you talking so much about Dabo? Like, that's how they look at me. Why is Dabo the guy that you talk about so much? Guys, because in 30 or 40 years, we're still going to be talking about Dabo Swinney. Like, this is, you guys that are fans of him and don't want me to talk about him like this need to acknowledge something that you probably say all the time when I'm not around, which is he has built a powerhouse. He has built a juggernaut at a time where building powerhouses and juggernauts where there were not juggernauts before is borderline impossible. He has done a historically good coaching job. The way that people talk about guys, maybe not Bear Bryant, like maybe that one is going a little bit too far, but this man's won 2 national championships. He's been to all those national championship games, everything else. He is a legend among us. He is, to me, right now, the most effective college football coach in America. He matters. And I give Clemson as a program all the credit in the world for what they've done. But part of that credit is this, is the scrutiny that you receive when you put yourself out front the way that Swinney has. And he deserves to have his words scrutinized. And at this time, where I believe that his players need him, if he is what he claims to be, that his players need him to stand in some level of solidarity with them. He can't stand with them on the basis of being sinners. That's not going to do it. You need to stand with them on the basis of them being people and respect how their humanity is disrespected. That's the place for Dabo. And if he's as good a coach as Clemson fans say, then he can handle hearing from me.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bomani, this first story comes from agriculture.
This is David Pitt with the Associated Press in Des Moines, Iowa. Food prices have been fluctuating since March when the coronavirus pandemic began to sink in for U.S. consumers and drove panic buying for certain types of food, including eggs, meat, and some shelf staples like potatoes and onions. Some grocery price jumps were because people were stocking up when the coronavirus first arrived, but even as some prices have dropped, the cost of produce, such as potatoes, onions, and carrots, has remained above last year's prices. The Labor Department has issued a report that indicates food prices jumped 2%. 6.6% in April, the largest monthly increase in 46 years. Prices for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs increased the most, rising 4.3%. Egg prices reached an all-time record of more than $3 a dozen wholesale in late March, but they have since fallen to less than a dollar a dozen. The situation has been worse for meat prices, largely because of illnesses among slaughterhouse workers. The outbreaks struck pork processing plants the hardest, but beef and chicken processors also some impact, as thousands of workers tested positive for the virus. Economists say the situation with meatpacking plants has improved somewhat, but they're still not operating at 100% capacity. That likely means meat prices and availability could continue to be volatile throughout the summer. For other items like fresh produce, it's possible prices could remain a bit higher too, because companies that process and package foods are paying for protective equipment for workers, and distancing measures could slow down work, and these costs may have to be passed on to consumers.
Hey, man, it's all fun and games till people can't eat, right? Like I wasn't justifying it when they were like, yo, these people are having COVID and they keep making them work in them chicken plants. I'm like, yo, that's really messed up. But I'm here to tell you, when people start going to the store, there ain't like no chicken for nobody. Like, well, you got to line up to get the last chicken breast. Don't let it be a wing. This whole thing will go to hell.
It's this whole food economy here where you have somebody working on one end and you have the other people on the other end consuming that product.
Yes.
You know, when that food stops coming, people are freaking the F out.
Or whatever it is. I can't eat. Like, it's all whenever people get dramatic about their need for money, what does it come down to? I got to feed my family. My son can't eat those plaques. Like, just that. Keep an eye on the food, man. Hipping y'all the game here.
All right. The second story comes from health.
Hi, I'm Swati Gupta, and I'm a freelance reporter with CNN in New Delhi, India. Last week, in the northern state of Uttar Pradesh, a gang of monkeys snatched blood samples collected from suspected coronavirus patients. The incident occurred when a lab assistant working with a COVID-19 facility in a hospital in the city of Meerut was carrying blood samples due for testing. According to Dr. Dheeraj Balyan, the medical superintendent at Lala Lajpat Rai Memorial Medical College and Hospital, the monkeys attacked the lab assistant and stole the sample box, which held three samples. The head of the hospital, V.K. Garg, in a statement said that the samples were not swabs collected from COVID-19 patients, but blood samples being sent out for regular tests. The monkeys climbed the trees with the samples and threw them after chewing through the packets. Hospital authorities immediately sanitized the entire area and no one came in contact with the tainted samples. An inquiry has been ordered to investigate possible mishandling of the said samples. India has reported a sharp surge in the number of coronavirus cases across the country. More than 190,000 cases have been confirmed with over 5,000 deaths.
By the way, sometimes I think we forget that it's a billion people in India. You know what I mean? Like the way we think about China, we just don't think, talk about India. I mean, it's not the same level of power, but still, like sometimes we forget it's a big thing over there. All I know is this. I don't mean to make light of what's going on in these streets, but if they found out some black person had run off with the COVID samples, they'd be knocking on every damn door in Harlem and all of us would be on the street right now until they got them blood samples back, right? They need to be over there in India. Like, these ain't people, right? They ain't no rights. Every monkey, we got to jack them all up until they tell us who did this. We cannot have monkeys out here stealing COVID samples. Gabe, you realize how much bad it has? Isn't that a science fiction movie? The monkeys got a hold of the COVID?
Well, I mean, there's two things there. One, it's a public health crisis. Like, yes. They're throwing, like, potentially infected blood samples and yep. releasing that all into
That's right.
public space. That's one. Number two, what's the intentionality of the monkeys there?
And that's what I'm saying. They be acting like the monkeys is just like people, right? All the monkeys up against the wall. Everybody, right? Who got the samples? Who did it? We gonna get to the, all these monkeys is gonna have to know that it ain't gonna be like that. I also just realized the overlap of connotation of monkey. I mean primates, like animals. It hit me right then that that could have gone in a different direction. I was like, all you monkeys up against the wall. Then I was like, I saw the look on your face and I was like, what's that I'm talking about? Oh, and it is highly unfortunate, by the way. And Gabe, you know what I feel like? We have just illustrated right here in this moment how many people lie about not understanding like the racism that exists, right? Because you hear me say all you monkeys up against the wall, and you could be like, yo, I could hear that being a scenario without there being actual monkeys. Everybody heard it and was like, whoa, that sounds like something that the police might actually say. And that's the point. Wow, that was profound.
All right, this next one comes from health as well.
Hello, I'm Heather Murphy. I'm a reporter at the New York Times, and I wrote about the question of whether people need to wear masks while running and biking. There's been a lot of confusion and conflict about this, especially in cities where we don't have the luxury of going on some meandering bike ride on a country road. People are angry, people are scared, people are leaving creative and kind of vicious signs telling people to wear masks, people are yelling at each other. I talked to a 73-year-old woman in New York City who has taken to screaming regularly as she gets in her minivan and some runner or biker whizzes by her without a mask. She will yell at them, tell them wear a mask, and she feels scared and she feels like it's her responsibility, not just to herself, but to her community. When I was asked to look into this further and try and get to the bottom of what people should do and what people need to do, I found it kind of interesting because I had just come back from about a month in Hong Kong. Hong Kong is the city that is often put up as the model of mask wear. Everyone wears masks in the stores, on the streets. When I got there, people were not yet wearing masks in New York City, and walking through the streets there and just seeing everyone wearing masks was new to me. And yet, when people go running or when people are exercising in the park, they typically don't wear masks. And it's not a conflict. It's just kind of understood that the way that different runners put it to me, no one thinks it's a big deal. Everyone understands you don't wear a mask when you're running. So what is this conflict about here? Is there something to it? Do we need to be wearing masks while we're running and while we're biking? There is no scientific consensus around this, which is a little bit frustrating. This is primarily because so little relevant research has actually been completed. The novel coronavirus is novel, and we don't understand that much. But what researchers do agree on is that masks in general slow the spread of the virus. They also agree it's safest to avoid exercising with anyone who is not in your immediate household or bubble, and also to keep your distance from other people. That said, they all agree that the chance of being infected outside is very low, especially compared to inside, and that the risks of infecting or being infected by a person by just running or biking past them very quickly are very low. If a person was to get infected by a maskless person or a masked person, if there was any kind of transmission outside, they tend to agree that it would probably be by between two people who were talking to each other, not just by somebody zooming past another person. One thing that some people point to is there was a study of more than 7,000 cases in China, and just one of those cases was connected to outdoor transmission. So in general, the thinking is exercising outdoors is safer than exercising indoors, especially if you're around other people.
All right. So I was really hoping that she would give a definitive answer about this, just because I will admit, when I'm out riding my bike with a mask on, it is inconvenient as hell.
I am of the mind that I need to be wearing my mask out when I'm going out for a little jog in the morning or the afternoon. However, I will say, and I don't think my wife is going to be listening to this podcast today, she is of the mind that she wants to wear the mask down the elevator first block or two. And then once we get on our loop, she takes the mask off. You know, I don't feel comfortable breathing with the mask on as I'm running, type of thing. So hearing this, if you haven't heard today, didn't do me any favors.
No, I didn't. Look, man, I just say, I get on the bike, I ride around Central Park, and it's some huffing and puffing trying to do that through some cloth, right? Like, I ain't got no wide repertoire yet, you know what I mean? It's a thing. So I was hoping she would say I couldn't, but just the chances are very low, not good enough for me. Nope, sorry. I'm doing whatever the hell I can. I'd be out there with Saran Wrap on my face if I could just poke a couple holes in my nose to breathe and it would still keep it safe.
Beep. Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
You watched Lance Part 2.
I did.
And that inspired you to call for voicemails of the wildest lie that you've told or the wildest lie that someone else has.
And it's held all to.
Yes. Yes. So we got a bunch of interesting ones. Our first, the woman didn't leave her name or where she was from, but I thought it was funny.
One of my ex-best friends stole $40 right out of my wallet. And it's crazy because this happened back in 2011. And I thought I was over it. And when I saw your tweet, I said, damn, I guess I'm not over it. Because to this day, he swears that he didn't steal the money out of my pockets when I knew everyone in the room wouldn't do that. But the funny part is that 2 seconds after I discovered that it was him who stole it, he ended up buying everyone food, and I had to be held back from basically punching this guy in the face. So this is the reason why I didn't watch the Lance Armstrong documentary on ESPN, because I said, nah, I'm not standing up for this guy when we all know that he's a damn liar. There's no point of us wasting our time.
He stole your money, then bought everybody food? Ass food! Wow. Yeah, like, it's one thing if you found some money on the ground, man. But, like, stealing from your people, you got to go in their stuff to do it? Like, at no point are you like, yo, I'm being real crack-like.
And stealing from somebody who's going to notice that the money's not there.
Yes. But that's where we are.
This next one comes from Dave in Aurora, Illinois.
I gotta say that my guy was the habitual liar. I mean, when Charlie Murphy came out with his true Hollywood stories and saying that, the first person that came to my mind was my old childhood friend. Backtrack, me and you the same age, so you can understand the importance of somebody getting a TurboGrafx 16 when we were young and first came out. For the whole summer, he would say, yo, I got TurboGrafx 16 when all of us got Nintendo and Genesis. We were like, word, got us all gassed up. Every time we go to his house, mom maybe put it away because it's brand new. The whole summer, every time we go to his house, Keith says he got to put it away. Then finally, when school starts back up, he's like, hey, guys, I don't got TurboGrafx 16. Fool, why are you lying to us? We like 12 years old, and we trying to get our TurboGrafx on, playing the damn arcade games, trying to get our parents to drive us up there, and you over here lying. So I don't know if you understand the importance of that, Bo, or if you remember TurboGrafx 16 compared to owning the Nintendo. But when you lied to us like that back then, we were salty. Why you gotta lie? And to this day, 30 years later, I don't know why we still talk to him, but we still do.
So let me tell you a story about 2005. 2005, I was a graduate student at UNC, and we was coming up on like Duke UNC at Cameron. That was a big game that year, right? And so me and the homies trying to figure out how we could get in to get there, all right? And so basically, we were going to try to figure out how to, we didn't go to Duke, but we were going to figure out how to camp out or something like that, or how to get somebody to camp out or whatever. Like we were cooking up a plan to make it happen, right? Okay. But then one homie was like, nah, we got some dudes over there that's online. They pledging. We'll get them to camp out and then get us the tickets. And so I'm hearing this and I'm thinking this plan don't sound good because we not in the frat, right? Like we're going to be way down the line on the ticket request. But he swears that he got the line in on the tickets. And so as the game is coming up, we keep asking, sup with the tickets? Sup with the tickets? And it would always be some different story. I can't remember. I wish I could call the homies now to tell it because they know, but I couldn't remember. Like it would be first thing that's like, okay, yeah, well, I found out that, yeah, they getting the tickets. That's right. They were getting the tickets. Then it's like, we found out, well, we'll see if it's enough tickets. Right. And then as we get closer to the game, my man says, all right, we ain't got the tickets, but my uncle, he is security guard over there. He'll hold the door open. Force. Night of the game comes, we all at my crib, and I just can't help it. I look at dude. No, I'm sorry, because he said, that's right. At some point he said he had tickets for himself, but he was checking about us. Night of the game, he at my house, and I just couldn't help it. And we like, thought you had tickets. I gave them to my parents for their anniversary. Nobody saw his parents come to town.
This is not the first time I've heard you tell that story. And again, it gets better with age, but the part that I remember thinking about it when you originally told it and what just brought in my head just now, getting let in by security is not an ideal scenario if you're trying to watch a game. And the reason I say this, and this, I understand my privilege as working at ESPN. This is an amazing opportunity. I'm not dismissive of that at all. So a couple of years ago, before I was working on this show with you, Bo, I worked on First Take. So I went to Cleveland for the NBA Finals. And I was like, oh, it would be dope if I got to go to the game. Never been to an NBA playoff game, never been to a finals game. Huge NBA guy. They're like, yeah, we'll get you a credential. Got me a credential. I was like, oh, this is legit. NBA Finals, NBA Finals, here I come, baby. So I got my credential. I'm walking over to the arena. Tons of people out. I was hyped by myself, right? Walking over from the hotel. Get inside, get through the gate, you know, with my little pass, all that sort of stuff. Only to realize I didn't have anywhere to sit. So it was kind of like a keep it moving type of situation. Like, you can't stand there, you can't stand there, just keep it moving. I'm like, well, where do I go? Where do I go?
Now imagine that at Cameron Indoor Stadium.
Yeah. When you're not there on a press pass, you're just there.
You barely have a seat when you're there on a press pass.
Yeah. Anywhere you go in an arena, there's a security guard. I couldn't go anywhere. I couldn't watch the damn game. So when I wanted to actually watch, I was in like the throngs of the arena in the corner where all like the cheerleaders come out and stuff. NBA Finals, Cavs, Warriors. I'm like trying to crane my neck to watch the game and I couldn't watch the game. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to go back to the hotel and watch the game on TV because I can't watch.
Yep.
Long way of saying getting let in without a ticket is not a good situation.
Yes.
You do not want that. And you can tell your man was lying.
He's so lying.
Last one. This is a legit one. Comes from Andrew in Brooklyn.
I went to the University of Nebraska, and freshman year, there was a guy on our floor who really wanted to make it seem like he was on the baseball team. And he went very far with this lie. He did not play any sports, I don't believe, but he started to dress exactly the way that the baseball team was dressing. He would go to the school store and buy the same apparel that they were having. He even got the same backpack, which I don't know how any regular students were able to get, because the student athletes were able to get the official Adidas backpacks that they were all given. And he even made the tag that a lot of the student athletes had that had their name and everything on it. And it got so ridiculous that we would have other people come up to us, mainly some of the, you know, young ladies that we were hanging out with at the time, that would say, hey, is that this guy on the baseball team? And we would kind of joke and thought it was funny at first, but then it just got really insane. I really wish I would have kept up with this guy, because I know it did come crashing down with him. But as far as I know, you know, he's out there somewhere probably making another lie.
I would just tell you now, before the internet, the I'm on the insert team here lie was much easier to pull off. And people were much more successful with it. Like, I'm on the football team? That ain't hard to pull off. But before the internet, how do you verify there's 100 dudes over there?
Yeah, but there's a difference between like waiting in line at like the restaurant and waiting in the line at the like club in a college town being like, yo, I'm on the football team. Let me in.
Yeah, that's fine. But if you just try to lie to a girl to get to next week, this was a much easier lie to tell back in the day.
Yeah, but from what we're gathering, it sounds like dude was walking around campus.
That lie, you didn't have to work that hard to sell that lie in the 80s. I know people used to play the I'm on the football team lie.
There's a difference too between a like I'm on the football team type of lie to like, you know, in high school when I was on the basketball team, or you know, in high school when I was on the football team and I scored 100 points in a game.
Yeah.
The tall tales try and make your friends think you're cool. Those are even two different situations within the same lie.
This is number three where this guy is crazy. Like, he's assuming something on a whole nother level. Like, he has made himself on the baseball team. Like, that's wow. But hey, I guess we all got to try. Whew, what a meandering all over the place podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Dave Pitt of the AP. Check out his story on food shortage and pricing being up at apnews.com. Thanks to Swati Gupta, a freelancer in New Delhi. She wrote a piece for CNN. Check it up about monkeys stealing blood samples with COVID-19. And thanks to Heather Murphy of the New York Times. Check out her story about whether or not runners need to wear a mask at newyorktimes.com. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.